Hey everybody, happy Sunday night. Today is March 10th, 2024. This is Across the Pitch. I am Mike Barrera, joined by my two buddies, Jose Nunez and Dave Miller. Dave, we're going to go to you first, out in the wonderful country that is England. How are you doing today, buddy?
Yeah, I'm good, obviously. It was a strange weekend, you know, I think probably the first time I've ever seen a US sporting event postponed for weather issues. Yeah, of course, we'll discuss that a little bit. But yeah, I'm doing well. Union still, in the context of MLS play, still unbeaten this year as well. So, I mean, yeah, plenty to be excited.
I like your positivity, Dave. Very good. Good way to start the evening. Jose, I saw you yesterday. As always, a pleasure. How are you doing tonight?
I'm okay, man. It's always great to see you. Met a lot of different people yesterday. But I think most importantly, and obviously the biggest topic of conversation, I'm finally dry. Like, I had to wash my coat because it was soaked. So I had to like wash the water off in the spin cycle and then, you know, obviously run it through the dryer and everything. It was just what a disaster of a day and so much water in such a quick amount. That was crazy.
So we talked about this yesterday. I mean, Dave, I guess if you want to talk about sport events game postponed. I mean, Jose, you and I go back to the 2008 Phillies, right, against Tampa Bay Rays. They get that game 5 postponed to, I think, you know, 2 days later, whatever it was. So we've seen some postponements before. At Subaru Park, however, we've never, to our knowledge, that we've both been fans for, you know, 12 to 15 years, have seen a game completely postponed to another day. It was weird because at 7:25, 7:20, right before the national anthem, the field looked playable. It looked okay. And then by every passing second of the national anthem, and for every second that the team was on the field, it got worse and worse and worse. And it was honestly something that I've never experienced in my life either in person. But it was funny because Jose, you and I were talking, I think Dave, you were in the chat too, about my video that I posted with the guys squeegeeing the field.
Yeah.
And I was like, funnily, oddly enough, my most popular tweet ever is just 5 grown men squeegeeing blades of grass. But again, that's what the people wanted to see last night, I guess. But it was, again, a very interesting experience. So, Dave, I mean, not much to talk about in those 6 minutes. I guess we can talk about the lineup. Anything in those few minutes that you can talk about or discuss?
There wasn't really much, was it? I think just the way that the field held up just didn't. Just didn't really help. You could see the passionate player team just struggling to really move the ball. I don't think, as you sort of said, there's really nothing to really go off in that first 6 minutes. Yeah. I mean, of course, you have Olivier Baez and other players going, "Oh, look, the pitch is playable. Look," as they try and bounce the ball on the air in the waterlogged, flooded pitch. Right, it could be one thing if you're going to try and make a case. Never try and bounce a ball in what you think is unplayable patch of area, because it's just going to help the referees' calls every day of the week. But I think the only other instance I could think of where a Union game was like this, and it probably should have been called off, was, do you remember that game? I think it was in 2021. I thought it was. It was like a Tuesday night or Wednesday night. And I remember, like, it's Columbus or Orlando, when there was like a thunder and like pretty much like a monsoon like weather. And the game was like delayed until like midnight. And they actually played like the final 25 minutes from midnight on was like,
Are you thinking of the DC match in Subaru Park? Yeah. I was at that game.
Yeah. I think it was ridiculous. It was like 4 hour wait. I remember lying and I was like, I'm going to go to bed at this point. There's no point in staying up for 4 hours, watch 20 minutes. If they win, they lose, I'm going to bed.
Like, yeah, we were quite literally 20 minutes away from just ending. We were up, I think, 3-1, too. I mean, the game was over.
Yeah.
It's so funny you guys mentioned this game because that's actually, and I don't know if you guys were podcasting at the time or anything. Like, I honestly can't recall if you guys were, but for some reason in my head, I'm like, I think I remember watching you guys when I was still sort of like, you know, outside looking in, like, you know, following along. But to Mike's point, I was also at that game and I remember making it from Chester to Pottstown and still having like 5 to 10 minutes to go to the bathroom before they restarted the game to finish the last like 10, 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. It was something obscene where like I could drive home and watch it despite waiting. And then we just said, all right, well, they're just going to call it. So let's just get on the road like 2 hours into the delay and then made it home. Yeah. And then next thing you know, it's like the last, you know, 5 or 10 minutes of the game were played. Just like, I don't know, man, almost like the ass crack dawn, like leading into midnight. Like maybe I'm exaggerating because of my memory, but like, I do recall how ridiculous the situation was.
No, it was a night to remember, and it was the I remember the DC fans were getting a little chippy with us in the concourse as well, as they typically do. It was certainly a night that I will not forget, and it was nice to kind of be there again, despite obviously only 6 minutes getting played. But we weren't surprised by the lineup. We kind of knew there was going to be some heavy rotation. Of course, Julian was sitting down again, which is rightfully so. He wants to be healthy for Tuesday night's match. But in terms of the roster, we saw Anderson starting, which was nice. We did have one opportunity with Uwa at the top of the box, but the ball just didn't go anywhere. And actually, the Union probably got saved by the rain on the other side of the field because the ball was in the box for Seattle, and it just kind of stopped in a puddle and, you know, ended up, you know, basically negating their attack. So in a way, the rain helped us there. But as of right now, according to MLS policy and guidelines, the teams will have to resume at that same minute mark whenever this game is rescheduled. So I know, Jose, I know I asked you last night if you had heard any rumors about when the game is going to be. As of right now, we were hearing late April being right before the Sounders take on DC United. So it'd be a Wednesday game for us. Any words so far? Have you heard anything, Jose, about the game?
No, I haven't heard anything. In fact, I haven't even heard what you mentioned. The only thing I have heard, and it's just like an absolute like rumbling, and it sort of makes sense, is if both teams are at a Leagues Cup, just toss the game in that middle of that week, or you know, like if they say that they both come out at the, like, I don't know, Seattle doesn't get out of the group stage, the Union drop out in the quarterfinals. 5 days later, just throw that game in there. You know, like, yeah. I hate to say the world's stopping, but like MLS is stopping as a whole because the last however many teams are still playing. So like a trip from Seattle to Philadelphia, I don't want to say can't be that bad, but like it wouldn't be that bad. Now, I obviously there are dates that are being tossed around. I don't know them. You don't know them, or you heard from whoever you heard. But even like, and kudos to Brian, I don't know how you say his last name, Schmechter, the head coach for Seattle.
Yeah.
Being able to do or willing to do a press conference afterwards where, like, he was actually answering questions from folks out in Seattle, which is awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Listening to that today, just, like, there are dates that are being tossed around. And, you know, he was very quick to say, well, we are working on the dates. But, you know, he was very quick to say to take any, you know, conspiracy theory out the way, like we're okay with this, like we're totally fine. Would we have liked to play today? Absolutely. Would we have liked to play tomorrow? Of course. But we understand that Philadelphia has to go to Mexico tonight or tomorrow morning, so like we get it. So yeah, thank you, Valerie Metzler, Schmetzler, whatever. Metzler. Anyhow, so like he gets it, and he understands the importance of an MLS team doing well in CONCACAF Champions Cup, which is awesome, sure. Right? Because I don't know if Seattle really wanted to, per policy, I think they could genuinely be like, no, we came all this way. We have to play tomorrow. So like I appreciate that Brian was willing to
do that. It's good karma.
Yeah, absolutely good karma, good people energy, right? And what I really, really loved about him was, and he had to be prompted to be fair, but was very open about thanking the fans that stood in that rain and that rain delay until they called the game. And I was actually out there with them. I posted some pictures and videos, and that's why I was late to get to the press room to get my backpack. So just, I just can't, man, what a crazy night of like,
well, speaking of crazy nights. So Valerie, again, hello. Thanks for joining the comments, but Kyle Almaney, half of the one team we agree on, Jillian Almaney, his wife, they had quite an evening. So I'll let you check out their social media and profiles. But basically, they had a tire issue on the way back home to Lancaster, and it just became the craziest night for them. They were basically stranded for hours. So I'm glad both of you guys made it home safe. I was texting you guys at the wee hours of the morning. I think at that point, the clock had changed to 3 a.m., and they're like, we're still here. Just stranded on the side of the road. So I'm glad you guys made it back, and somehow they coached children and teens the next day. I don't know how they did it. I'm very impressed by the two of you. But just to kind of touch back on the MLS guidelines. So, again, like I said, the game's going to start right back where left off. But the players are going to be the same, too. According to the policy on the MLS website, The same roster we had to start the game, as well as substitutions, will have to stay the same. Of course, there are exceptions. For example, injured or unavailable players. If players are away on, for national duty call up, but they get loaned out, if they're hurt, et cetera, there will be obviously some switches being done. And you can see everything and all the policy on the website. But it looks like we're going to have Marcus Anderson and Uwa shutting out there again, even if Julian's fine for the reschedule game.
Yeah, because Julian wasn't in the roster. My question for you was going to be, and obviously maybe I have to hit up our lawyer friend to understand this a little bit better, but like,
sure.
What about transfers, right? But Julian's not even in the roster. Say this game happens in July and Julian's no longer part of the team for whatever reason, meaning a sale of some sort, right? Like,
yeah.
Obviously it doesn't matter because he wasn't even rostered for the game. He was nowhere to be seen, which is, I don't know, it's interesting. Wow.
Very much so. And Dave, is that typically the case in overseas too for your leagues, that it would just be a full restart once the game's resumed?
So basically the rule, which is sort of bizarre to me, like why you would have to start the game from where it was in the sixth minute, like nothing happened, just replay the game from the start. If teams want to make changes to starting 11, just do it. Like,
yeah.
But that's the same in England. So say for the incidents happened on Saturday happened in England, for example, game be postponed, they just replay it at a later date, and then, teams can make as many changes as they want. The game would start from the first minute again, so teams could play a completely different 11 if they wanted to. Wow. You have seen it in some instances before where, like, say, if there's like 15, 20 minutes left in the game, well, like, for example, the Thunder and Lightning game when it finished, like, ridiculous o'clock. It's DC, yep. Those years ago, what they might have done was they would have called the game off and probably played it behind closed doors, or just played it with free to entry on the Sunday and just said to come in if you want to come watch the final 20 minutes and we'll finish it there as it is. You do get some instances like that. But there was one case with the Gillingham game last weekend. It was like a 15-minute, like, full-on hail. Like, the pitch wasn't in the good condition it was. And it was like a 15-minute, like, full-blown hailstorm. Like, just hail raining down for like 15 minutes. And we were 2-0 up. So we were really concerned that the game was going to get called off, or at least stopped momentarily before potentially being called off. And we thought, if we don't get to the 75th minute, we're going to have to come back here on a Tuesday night and have to replay the entire game. So I guess, like, I can sort of get both instances. I sort of think, like, if it's 0-0, nothing's happened after like 5 minutes, I can sort of understand starting the game over a bit again. I think most leagues all have their different rules over here. It's a lot different, but I guess some pitches would like a lot of leagues, well, pitch inspections would have been done long in advance to make sure that teams wouldn't have had to travel the ridiculous distance. And they usually, like, for instance, we played Barrow, which is the other end of the country, before Christmas. They pretty much did the pitch inspection for the game, like, 30 hours before kickoff, like 35 hours before kickoff, called the game off, and it stopped fans from traveling up to the game. So I guess that could have been something that could have been done, maybe. Or
see, that's an interesting thing. I think it's a great segue, Dave, into our next point. So, Jose, you and I were, I think, on our way to Red Bulls versus Union against in League's Cup, and I know you were very close to the stadium when they called the game off. You were about maybe half hour away, and I know we were talking. You kind of, you put some feelers out and wanted to get the word on the field and the pitch. And you made a post today on Twitter about that. So can you share what we heard about the field last night? Because, again, we can't say it enough times. The grass was like a swimming pool out there for the players. So go ahead.
Yeah, so I just getting to know people, you sort of, start networking, and these networks grow and grow. And even for, like, the most obscure shit possible, sure. Like, Sports Turf is a gigantic network of people who take care of professional fields, et cetera, et cetera. So reaching out to some people and sort of just hearing them out and sort of like, sharing pictures and videos and timelines and whatever, like, I got far more information than I ever expected about grass and soil, which is awesome. Obviously people are super dedicated, but I don't know, man, it seems like the entire week leading into it was like the precursor to what happened yesterday in terms of, like, rain here stopping, just leading the entire week. And then you obviously have pre-game practices that happen on the field. So, like, that's also, a stressor on the field. When could it have been tarped up? I don't know if that makes too much of a difference, but could they just have literally just shut down Subaru Park with a tarp for however long? Are we getting are we getting bots in our chat now? Are we that big?
We saw a bot in the comments. I had to remove it.
Wow.
We're getting big time, Jose. We're going.
Yeah, when you start getting, you know, linking my bio bots on our streams, you know, we made it. But, you know, reaching out to people, just like, listen, everything that happened in the week leading onto Saturday made it very difficult because, again, soil's like a sponge, right? It can only soak up so much water no matter how much drainage you have underneath it. So the soaking up of water did not help. Never mind the fact that February and March, apparently the type of soil that's used at Subaru Park and really just any soil, soil period is not great in these early months to kind of like let water flow down and go ahead and, you know, drain out. So that's another thing I learned. But then ultimately what I did learn was that, and this checks out with all the pictures and videos, that thousands of people that were there, not thousands, maybe a few thousand, whatever, at Subaru Park. So,
yeah. It was more than I thought, but go ahead.
At 7 o'clock, the stand-in referees were told that the field was good to go. That's my understanding. Okay. So between 7 o'clock and 7:30, when the first kick happened, that's where it all devolved. So warm-ups were fine. 7 o'clock, field was good. 7:20, as I understand, field was also okay. But then 7:30, like that, between 7 to further on out, like it is just like the fastest that field like deteriorated. Because like you could see these gigantic, I mean, go on my Twitter, go on Mike's Twitter, like just search Philadelphia Union. You'll see it.
No, so, well, if you guys want to see like a chronological bit of you know, I guess a time lapse of how the field got worse and worse, go to my TikTok. I put a video on there for my whole night, and it basically, you see it. You know, I get there to stands. The field looks great. I think it was at 7:20, and then it just got, and then it really looked like the players were on sand because they were leaving footprints in the grass. When the ball would get kicked, it would go literally maybe 5 or 6 feet at the most. Kyle also says, I was about to put my swimsuit on and swim a 200 butterfly on that pitch. Listen, Kyle, if he did, I think you'd get a lot of people staying in the seats to see that. I know I would have. But it was definitely like a swimming pool out there. Go ahead, Jose.
The other thing I will share is, you know, and just to like validate sources, these are people that I've talked to that have gone to school, to college for this, right? Like, and have worked for Division One, Division Two, Division Three, collegiate. And if you need more than that, experience with the Eagles, with the Washington Commanders, Redskins, whatever you want to call them, when you were a fan or watched them, and even MLS. So, like, when I'm sharing this information, I'm not just making it up to like, bail out someone like Mark Mello, who is super transparent about the process and everything. And we were also, as press and fans, fortunate to have CJ Buck, who from time to time would also share about the process of the turf management at Subaru Park. So I'm not here to bail anybody out. I'm not here to provide vindication for anybody. I'm just genuinely someone who went out and looked for, you know, people who know this field and sort of like source them out, right? Like, listen, what the hell actually happened? And that's exactly it. So like when I see all these Red Bull fans and college football fans, and they're saying New York Red Bulls field would have never had this issue, our groundskeepers are top class, like, that may be the case, whatever, but like, relax.
So one of the things that, well, first off, real quick before I continue, Adam Mack, who's worked with us, does great work doing college football and baseball, says if this was a backyard soccer game, we would have played. And I actually mentioned that in the press box, Adam. I was like, I've played in these puddles before. Jose, Dave, I know you guys have played in these puddles before. But again, check out Adam Mack. He just put a really good hype video out for the Phillies. It was great. And by the way, Adam, Cleveland State, Monday night, Horizon League, semifinal. I know you're going to be watching. I'll be watching too. Thanks for joining us, buddy. But in terms of the other fans, you know, talking that stuff, I know Red Bull's really in your comments this past what hour or so, Jose.
It just doesn't make sense. Like what? I keep, you know, that meme of like 50 Cent who like wakes up and he's like, "What the fuck did I say?" You know what I mean? Like that funny video. I'm thinking to myself, I'm genuinely just talking about grass, dude. Like I don't care what happened in New York, like.
Here's also another thing we talked about. It's like, well, could they knew rain was going to be all week. Could we have covered it up earlier in the week to maybe prevent it, whatever. And to the point that, Dave, you had mentioned in our group chat is the fact that they had to play on Tuesday night too. So they had to get the field ready between Wednesday and Friday evening and then Saturday. And then the rain on top of that didn't help. But it was something that I hope doesn't happen again, because we have seen harder rain games at Super Park. We've seen worse conditions. We've seen snow. We've seen sleet. We've seen all different kinds of things. And we've never seen it get that bad. So I'm a little concerned moving forward if this happens again. But again, to your point, Jose, that you mentioned on the conversations you've had, this time of the year may not be the best for that. Maybe come July, this wouldn't have happened. So again, I'm not a groundskeeper. I don't know. I'm just going off what the information that Jose has. But it was certainly a night to remember.
Listen,
but
now, yeah, if you want any more validation to what I posted, sure. Just peep at the people who liked it. Right now it's whatever, 250, almost whatever, 260 likes. Start reading some of the bios of the people who are liking the information I shared. You have folks who are MLS groundkeepers. You have folks who are Division 1, 2, and 3 groundskeepers who are I like to think that them liking it is an agreement of like, okay, this makes sense. This is what happened. Yeah. Whatever. It could literally just be that I'm talking grass and they're just happy.
They're excited that it's out.
Yeah, right. Someone's talking about grass. We're excited. But I like to think that they also have thumbs that can work on a phone or on a keyboard to tell me, listen, this is hog shit. Like,
yeah,
you're absolutely wrong. But I like to think that that's validation to the fact that, like, listen, this was just whatever, a week's worth full of rain. Plus, I don't know, like, it must have been like 2 days worth of rain in the span of 2-3 hours, 4 hours, whatever. Like,
yeah.
Neither here or there. Again, not here to bail out any one union employee. Just genuinely, and Mike, you and Dave know me, like just someone who's super curious about this type of shit and just like, all right, well, let's find primary sources and hear about the process, because I'm not going to stand here or sit here or whatever and try to talk drainage systems like a lot of, you know, Twitter fingers are behind the screen that are suddenly like, you know, soil experts in New York.
Well, I'm definitely not a soil expert, but I will make sure to follow up on your tweet to see if any new information comes out. But we do have some silver linings that came from last night. The union didn't get to play, and now they're rested, I guess you want to say, with quotation marks, rested. However, Pachuca did play on Saturday night, but they had a very, very heavy rotation in their lineup. I think, what was it, Jose? I think 10 of the 11 players were academy players, if not homegrown players. So, Dave, I'm going to ask you the question first. Who has the bigger advantage entering Tuesday? Pachuca, who did not play any of their starters, or us, who went through the mayhem that is Saturday, but now get to travel much more rested than we would have been?
I still think Pachuca. I think, obviously, you know, the home team, again, I think the main advantage is the fact they're playing at home. They don't need to travel. They get to, you know, again, they're playing at home, so they get to do their usual week, as in, you know, we'll prepare for games they usually do, whereas the union have got to go through the hassle of traveling, you know, getting on the plane, traveling to Mexico, and, you know, having to, I'm not too sure the weather conditions are like at this time of year, but probably having to acclimatize to weather conditions they're potentially going into. So, you know, I think, again, Pachuca, you also alluded to the fact they've also made 10 changes out of 11 from the team that played the union in the first leg. Mm-hmm. I think I saw Jose's tweet, or Jose messaged us saying that, like, I think Drisi hadn't played. I don't think Rondon was involved either. Quite a few, pretty much all the big hitters were, you know, held back. So it's going to be, I think they still clearly have the advantage. But of course, the union have the fact that they kept a clean sheet at home in the first leg. They've got that little away goal cushion, or knowledge of knowing that if they did score an away goal, it means that, you know, Pachuca would have to score two. So, I mean, that's the big positive.
I agree. Jose, what do you think? I mean, of course, the travel, just in terms of stamina, you know, we know that these players need to get training sessions in a way the union players, starters, may have had a little more training to kind of keep their legs fresh entering Tuesday. What are your thoughts on both of the teams and their status?
I think, yes, you know, it was to me when we were in the rain delay, just taking a look, I'm sorry, I just got a message. It's interesting. taking a look at their lineup for their Pachuca versus Querétaro, which, of course, the Union fans should be very, very aware of who Querétaro is, considering the run-ins and during Leagues Cup last year.
We know you are. We know you. Yeah. That's your favorite team.
That's my. Those are my guys. The Monterrey is quickly climbing for all the wrong reasons. But to see four triple-digit jerseys featuring on a league game against the 10th place team in the Mexican League was sort of like, okay, they really are just hoping that home field advantage for that league game comes through and they're able to do something. So, yeah, Idrissi just had the whole night off. Eric Sanchez, their midfielder, had the night off despite being rostered. Rondon did go in for like a 35-minute shift and scored a penalty, actually. So, did feature in the match, but there were still a slew of other players that were rostered or not rostered at all that honestly just sat back and did nothing. Union-wise, yes, they got rest, but you also don't want too much rest per se, right? Like, I think that that is genuinely a thing that I would think that if you're Jim Curtin, you're like, all right, well, they went through a warm-up session that's like 30 some minutes. Like, they were able to work out a little bit, you know, the night of the game, instead of pulling a 60, 70 minute shift for some of these guys, 45 minute pre-planned substitution, like they did it against Sporting Kansas City. So maybe there was a little bit of joy behind that. But nonetheless, I really do think that home field advantage for Mexican teams is just unbelievable, though. You can't discount what the Union did at Saprissa, because that is a very, very difficult stadium to play at in I forget what it's called, La Cueva out in Costa Rica. So now they go to the Hidalgo out in Pachuca, and hopefully, listen, all it takes is one goal, and then the Union are in a good spot to try to ride it out. Though there is such a thing, I believe, with the Union, that there is such a thing as scoring too early.
For the Union's sake.
For the Union's sake. I think there is such a thing. Say the Union score in the first 5 minutes. Can you imagine sitting back for 80 minutes, 90 minutes against Pachuca? Because Pachuca doesn't really need to adjust their game too much. If you really think about the game that they played against the Union, everything went right. They just couldn't finish. Like, they thoroughly, more or less, dominated that game, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, so before we – actually, I'm going to look at the lineup we had from last Tuesday as well as the weather. So I looked at the weather for Tuesday. It's supposed to be a low of 50, a high of 80. It says Tuesday morning will be between 5 a.m. and 6 a.m., 50 degrees. Around 2 to 3 p.m., it's going to be high of 80. So I guess assuming by, you know, 6, 7 p.m. that night, it's going to be much, you know, a little warm, a little cooler by then. So I'm saying 60 degrees or so. So it won't be too bad. In terms of the lineup from last week, we had Gazzaga and U up top and Sullivan at the 10. Now, we are hoping that Julian Carranza is healthy for this match. I'm assuming because he was off on Saturday, that would be the case. I mean, Dave, do you envision any changes at all from the rotation that we saw last week? We obviously had Bedoya starting. We had McGlynn on the left and Martinez on the back. And, of course, we had the weird makeshift back line of Harriel and Glesnes.
I think the Union will probably look to be a bit more defensively solid in terms of, you know, well, not solid, perhaps a bit more structured in comparison to what they obviously played with in the first leg. Obviously, it's fair play to Nate Harriel. He stood up. Yeah. He did a good job. He stood up. And again, I think, to be fair, I did watch the game, or sort of, you know, I sort of kept a half an eye, or like kept my eye on the game. And, you know, I thought the Union actually did really well for the most part. They did create chances. Obviously, the whole penalty debacle. as an England fan, too early, isn't it? I know we're not scoring way too early. No, but yeah, I think in regards to, you know, just the change the team made, our team will probably make, I think I'll probably see a low in probably Glesner's centre-back pairing. Okay. Harry will right back, and the back and left back. I think that probably is the most likely back four. But yeah, I think
how does that work with straight reds in CCC?
I think it was a one game. Yeah, that was a one game.
Is it back. Just one game? Okay, because I genuinely haven't thought too much about Elliot. Well, like, I don't think he starts, but
yeah. Didn't Glesnes miss due to a Glesnes missed for suspension as well, didn't he, for a second booking?
No,
no, it was Lowe and Elliott.
Yeah, it was Lowe and Elliott. Elliott was the straight red card, and what's his name? Lowe was the accumulation of cards over some pre-sig matches, and Pachuca won.
So Jose, you think that Elliott doesn't play again on Tuesday? You think it's going to be Lowe and Glesnes on the back line?
I think it'll be Lowe and Glesnes, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, dude, like, if you think about that Saprissa game with Lowe, I honestly think he was the most impactful sub during that crazy match, because he's, you know, and I got to ask him after the match. I was like, listen, I like to think that you understand these games better than most of your teammates. And he's like, yeah, I've played CONCACAF all of my life. I know what it means to get the crowd going. I know how impactful they can be. And obviously that shouldn't take experience from CONCACAF. That should just be something that you feel every single game. But he understands just how chippy it is. And I think Lowe's the perfect guy, as long as he stays in position, doesn't get drawn out too far, which happens probably way too often. I think that a Lowe and Glesnes pairings makes sense. Though, dude, having seen how well Harriel played against Rondon,
I wouldn't be
surprised if Jin tries to roll the dice again, because to make Harriel force Rondon to be the player with the most turnovers that match.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
And to Valerie's point, so there's a couple things that I'm asking here, and you guys kind of both touched on it. So the first thing is what Valerie mentions. Why is Glesnes not absolutely perfect anymore? We have seen Glesnes have a very rough CONCACAF Champions Cup. I mean, he's contributed to many of the goals that we've seen so far, just on really poor mistakes. And it was in the game against Pachuca, his mistake almost cost Union a goal as well. So I'm worried about Jacob. I don't know what's with him right now. Maybe it's just
even the preseason, Mike. Yep. Remember that video of him heading it back? Yeah, like that was shocking. That was very shocking.
This has been a little bit of Glesnes' issue over the past, you know, whatever, 2 years. We've had him have miscues like this before, but now it's just obviously magnified because of the importance of these games. But listen, let's call it what it is. Daniel Gazlag hasn't exactly like been amazing these last couple of matches either. And granted, he was also, I wouldn't say out of position. I would say he was used differently on Tuesday night, and that was because of Julian being out of the lineup. That was because of the center backs being out of the back line. So I understand that Jim had to get creative with it. But let's say, hypothetically speaking, Julian is not in the lineup. I want to see Quinn Sullivan on the right-hand side again. I think Quinn has been probably one of the best players we've seen so far this season. He's been outstanding on the ball. He's been outstanding off the ball. In the Pachuca game on Tuesday, it was his cross to Ua that ricocheted to Daniel. It was a perfectly put cross from Quinn that kind of started that whole sequence. So I want to see Quinn on the right-hand side. I think he's earned that. So then you bring Daniel back into the 10, and then you put, I'm assuming, Marcus Anderson up top with Ua, because that seems to be what Jim is doing right now. That's what he did on Saturday. Julian was not in the lineup on Saturday, and he put Marcus in there, who's going to replicate both the motor and the pressure that you want, which is what you get from Julian on a week-to-week basis. But to me, I feel like Daniel has been so-so these last couple games. I feel like the missed opportunity against Pachuca was a bit unnerving for me. I want to see him just bury that, and he didn't. But again, maybe I'm just being a little nitpicky. But Dave, any thoughts on what happens if Julian does not play? Do you go Carranza, or do you try to run with Gazlag up top again, put Quinn at the 10?
Well, Julian and Carranza are the same person.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know what I mean. You get what I mean. It's been a long day. Go ahead.
No, I don't know. I mean, if Carranza isn't available, I mean, maybe he rolls the dice and puts Anderson in there. Who knows? I mean, maybe Jim perhaps looks at it and thinks that we need to play with two strikers, and maybe now, you know, he actually has like a fully strength, not fully, well, he'll have all the defender, he'll have a fully strength back line, or all of his defenders at his disposal shoes. He might perhaps might perhaps feel that there probably won't be as much of a need to have us when I'm out on the right to be as defensively solid, perhaps knowing that he can probably trust the back four to probably hopefully deal with the Pachuca attack perhaps better. You know, but again, like, it's definitely, the game is there for the taking. They just need to not. I mean, again, I think as Jose sort of alluded to as well, the Damian Lowe thing. He's played in CONCACAF, you know, all his career and stuff, and you know, being ready to play in an atmosphere like this. But it can be daunting, especially for certain players. You know, you go, no disrespect to the crowds and the support in the MLS, but it's a big difference, you know, going from happy clapping, people just banging on drums and singing, you know, singing songs every week to the booming, you know, raucous and, you know, the damning, the taunting atmosphere that you do get in, you know, South American, Central American countries, you know. It's a completely different atmosphere. You saw the way that the, you know, Union played in Mexico last season and the year before and 2 years before that. Like, the atmosphere was just a different level. It went up 5 or 6 notches in terms of how loud it was, how, you know, just how passionate it was in terms of, do you know what I mean? It's a different world.
Yeah.
The support in Mexico and other places in Central America in comparison to the United States. So I'm intrigued to see how some players perhaps playing there for the first time will deal with that pressure. Obviously, you've got players like Jose Martinez and Bueno, even like Kai Wagner, who's played in Germany. You know, the atmosphere there probably can somewhat mirror it to a sense. But you're going to have other players who perhaps are going there for the first time who have lacked experience in playing it, like a Harriel, a Quinn Sullivan, Jack McGlynn, you know, well, perhaps haven't. Yeah.
That's a good. I'll go back to you in a second. That's a good point you're bringing up. So, are you suggesting? Because for me personally, you can't have a lineup without McGlynn, Harriel, and Quinn right now. I think they're all three of them are playing too good. Are you suggesting then that Jim maybe overthinks it and takes one of those three out because of that environment and because of that experience?
I'm not saying necessarily that. I'm just saying, you know, it's a different atmosphere. I think perhaps the players maybe need to prepare themselves more differently for it, or just. You know, it's just one. It's just a different world for them to go into. So, I think, perhaps Jim does do that, and perhaps he maybe feels a bit more comfortable putting a player like Bueno in there, who, you know, perhaps isn't phased by something like that. But who knows? I mean, I feel like, again, as I sort of mentioned earlier, I don't know how much Jim will want to tempt fate, especially, you know, with the fact they've got that away goal cushion. They're knowing if they can just get one goal and not necessarily take an early lead, but if they get a goal and they break the deadlock after 50 minutes or something, it then really puts the pressure on Pachuca. Like, but again, it's going to be, the atmosphere is going to be different. It's going to be up to these players. You see it in England all the time when, like, Jose, you remember you watch Premier League football, you remember all these times when, like, Arsenal would be up at the top of the Premier League for ages and they go to Anfield and just the atmosphere would be turned up to a different level and they just crumble every single time. Like,
Champions League nights on Tuesdays, right?
Anfield nights. Anfield nights, Celtic Park, you know, places like that where the atmosphere is just booming. And, you know, I mean, it's a different kettle of fish in comparison to, like, going to, you know, Red Bull Arena or playing NYCFC or into Miami away. Like, it's a completely different kettle of fish. Do you know what I mean? Like, we say about the NFL as well, like playing at the link, the fans and atmosphere with the fans just makes such a big difference. And
cool,
this could be a different kind of fish. But I mean, again, the squad's done it before. Perhaps, you know, maybe they might play Bedoya in there to have that experience head in there, maybe, who knows. But I think the squad's done it before, so fingers crossed they can get the job done. But I mean, again,
go on.
I was gonna say, just the crowd is gonna probably come into it a bit in terms of, you know, maybe the lack of experience some players do have, if they do feel daunted. But from what we've seen from players like McGlynn and Harry and Quinn so far, they're not as easily, you know, easily daunted as perhaps some players their age would be.
Well, that's the thing. You bring up the point about Bedoya, and that's one concern I have. I have liked him out of his substitution role. I think he's contributed the most in that role this year. And I think, as we've mentioned already, probably 5 times this year, this is what we wanted last season, to have that experience and that calmness and that ability to just kind of impact the game in different ways off the bench. So I do worry that Jim puts him to start, because I think personally, if you're in a 1-1 match, or if you're trailing a goal, to have Bedoya come in the 70th, 65th minute might be more impactful than having him start the whole game. But Jose, I mean, he brings up Bueno. Dave brings up Bueno. I think if Julian is out, which I don't think he is, but I think if Julian is out, you put Quinn Sullivan up top in his place and you put Bueno on the right. And you would have Harriel, Bueno, and McGlynn, or I'm sorry, Quinn on the kind of the right-hand side of the formation. Do you agree with that formation, or do you want to try something different and maybe keep Bueno on the bench, or you put Bedoya in? I mean, what are your thoughts on the lineup? If again, Carranza is out.
I think if Carranza is out, maybe it was because of the comfort level, right? Which obviously was having whatever the goal advantage coming into Subaru Park against Saprissa, and maybe that's what gave Jim the comfort or the latitude to want to be okay with putting Anderson in. Let's not forget, Anderson almost scored, right? It was off of that deflection or off of that save that Quinn then scored, if I remember. So Anderson can do it, and what a vote of confidence it would be for Anderson to be selected if Carranza's out, right? For a must win game against Pachuca in a way, right? Or I guess draw can technically get you to penalties, I believe. So I would be okay though with what you suggest, right? Of like having that Bueno and then Quinn sort of like right side. So Nate, Bueno, Quinn.
Mm-hmm.
Though I don't know, like I agree with you that though it's a small sample size, like having Bedoya there as a substitute is perfect so far. Yeah. Has been really, really good. I just don't know if it makes sense to have him as a starter. So like that's where I lean more onto Bueno. Though that gives me fear because how cursed the man has been, right? Having just recently called up for the Venezuelan national team, all he needs is to go out to Pachuca and get an ankle injury and then not show up. Yeah, not to show up to international duty because of another injury. And I laugh because it's at this point it has to be sort of like comical how unfortunate he has been and obviously not his doing. But yeah, I'd be okay with the Quinn. Though, you know, I think Quinn is playing no matter what. If anything, I'm just glad that the fact that we as press and fans had this game sort of get canceled is fantastic, because when I saw Quinn Sullivan as a starter against Seattle, I thought to myself, when is this kid's legs are just going to explode? Like, yeah, he's got gigantic hamstrings, but like, holy shit, that's a lot.
So I know McGlynn and Quinn have really been playing a lot. I mean, McGlynn played 120 minutes on the previous week against the Priest. So they've both have been logging a lot of time. Jim Curtin has mentioned Quinn is by far our most fit player. He will run and play until he drops kind of thing. But that honestly, Jose, I thought the same thing. I'm like, I really wish that Quinn had a night off and we kind of got that on Saturday, which is good. I think, yes, I know he's only 19 years old. I get it. All three of us have been 19 too and could play like crazy, but these are still human beings who eventually get tired. So I am concerned about that. I think the reason why I want Bueno on the right-hand side though, and I think maybe Quinn up top at striker, is because I do like the thought of having Jose Martinez having some freedom to maybe alternate at times with Bueno, because you know Bueno can cover defensively, and then basically have Jose be more assertive up top. Whereas if you have Quinn out there, it's not going to be the same back and forth that we can do with those two in that formation. And then as the game progresses, depending on how things go, you could always take Bueno out. You could bring Quinn down to the right side of the diamond, and you could put in Anderson up top and then use that pressure and that speed to kind of force Pachuca into a mistake or get that goal, whatever it might be. Again, this is all going to be determined on how the game unfolds. If the Union are up 2-0 within the first half hour, then all this conversation kind of goes to shit and it's just a whole different game plan. But again, you know, we'll see how exactly they do. But in terms of one concern I have, Dave, is the fact that the Union just keeps giving up goals early. We saw it last year. I think we saw it the year before. I know they didn't give up a goal against Pachuca, but do you think that these goals this year have been kind of fluky, or do you think this is more of the same that we've seen last year? Because to me, and to your point again, if they give up a goal early at Pachuca, that crowd is only going to get louder and louder by the minute. And we can't just keep coming back in games. We have to eventually take a lead in a game. And it doesn't seem like that's something that we're able to do right now. Obviously, you know, even against Saprissa, we were down a goal before we took the lead. So, again, Dave, what are your thoughts on what you've seen so far from them defensively?
Well, again, I think perhaps that, you know, the case again, perhaps last year, the defensive mistakes weren't as magnified as they have been this year. I think you look at how big some of the defensive mistakes have been that the team's made this year. I mean, you look at that first game against Saprissa, the horrible on goal, you know, switching off at the back for the second goal.
Yeah.
And even, you know, and I think it was the Chicago game, wasn't it? It was similar. And, you know, the first goal, can't really do much about it, but the second goal, similar, is essentially sort of a routine sort of thing for the keeper, you know, just to dive in, catch like the, you know, the attempt at the cross shot, whatever, and, you know, dive in, catch the ball, or, you know, get two solid hands on it to make sure, you know, the ball doesn't go like parry back into the danger zone. But some stand exactly that. He's not able to hold on to it. Union then on the back foot inside their own six, around the 6 yard box, and it sets up a goal. It's also the defensive mistakes perhaps have become more magnified. Again, it's concerning the amount of goals they are conceding. They were conceded five goals against Saprissa, two against Chicago. You know, a lot of goals they've conceded. So, yes, because I don't know what they can do to fix it, to be honest, because I think, you know, we've seen five of the backs sort of waned off last year, the four of the back they've struggled with. So, but they've looked better going forward. So perhaps that's the risk they've decided to take, is if we'll score more goals going forward, we might concede more at the back.
So you're almost suggesting that their identity is changing then with how this team is beginning to develop.
Potentially, yeah. I think you can see they look a bit more open defensively at the back. Throughout the opening games of the season, like even just looking at the possession stats and things like that, like, they have more possession against Pachuca in a game perhaps in the past where they wouldn't have done so. You know what I mean? So. I mean, who knows? Even like the Saprissa game, the double position there, like they're looking like they have more opportunities than perhaps other games. You know, you'd see some games where the Union, even at home, would have like three shots and, you know, score one. Again, it's like they're getting into more the better possession players being more adventurous on the ball and off the ball. So
they had more possession against Chicago today, 54%. And Jose, that's kind of, I know you stepped away for a second, but that was the kind of the segue we're going to have before we wrap up the show soon. Obviously, defense is an issue. We're constantly trailing in games.
Yep.
We are making our comebacks, but we cannot go down there and be down 1-0 again. But kind of what Dave and I are alluding to, and what is the opposite of what Curtin has said. Curtin is really hitting home. We are a defensive team first. We can't get into shootouts with teams and expect to win. But it does feel like they are slightly shifting towards a more offensive-minded approach because they just can't seem to stop anybody defensively anymore like they used to. We don't have that trust that they're going to be perfectly fine week in, week out. Do you have that same concern with this team moving forward or even just, again, in a couple of days?
Man, it's tough, right? Because it is genuinely very early into the season, right? When you think about a team that's about to play, hopefully, 50-plus games, because that would mean that they go really, really far in all competitions. Sure. The Union have played maybe, what, like 10% of the games? Like, tops, right? Mm-hmm. Like, at this point, not even. So, it's hard to base too much on it, though. The mistakes that are being made are just so glaring. No, you have to look no further than, maybe weather affected it, but the Glesnes own goal or the crazy handball that Glesnes commits outside the box, which leads to the free kick that gets scored on, or Jack Elliott, rather than tugging a jersey and pulling, sly tackling from behind against the priest and getting a red card. Like these defensive lapses are just sort of bananas right now, considering that not too long ago this team was sending two or three players to MLS All-Star as defenders. So like something's a little off, and I hope they can sort it, though it needs to be sorted quicker than ever, considering that Pachuca, I think last I checked, it could not have changed much, I don't think, but I think they were the highest scoring team in Liga MX so far this season. Not a great goal differential, and that's why actually the Posadelphian in me was like very happy with the way that the Union handled keeping Pachuca off of the score sheet at home, considering that the team was goal differential not great. They're allowing a lot, but they're scoring more, so they're winning, which is, you know, whatever, you know, they can keep that going if that keeps them in the top five or whatever. But at some point you have to think that I don't know that the Union keep Idrissi or Rondon quiet two games in a row. You know what I mean? Like that's yeah. a very tough thing to replicate back to back, though, with a game in between. But you understand what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. So I am so intrigued for tomorrow's press conferences. Jim will be up at the stand at 11:30 tomorrow morning. I'll be on covering it. I'm not sure if I'll be asking any questions. I'll be doing work. But then Guillermo Almada, who is Pachuca's head coach, and this is back to what you're saying, Mike, of like, this is a team that's going through its own paces in terms of having home field advantage. He and whoever he brings up to the stand do not go up to a microphone up until 7:30 at night. So
really?
They're having either an evening practice, or that's the time that CONCACAF allowed at him. I like to think that maybe they just practice late as a way, and it makes sense considering they just played last night, get today off, get most of the day off tomorrow, and then have an evening practice, a super light recovery practice tomorrow, play on mm-hmm. Tuesday. Maybe that's what they're doing, but that's a very, very late press conference. So expect some sort of coverage from the three of us or one of us for the three of us at some point tomorrow. Certainly I'll do my best with the Guillermo Almada stuff tomorrow and
awesome.
and translating it.
Yeah. So just to talk about, since Dave, you mentioned the possession, we've been talking about kind of like how the team has looked. They've actually won possession in three of their five games so far, which I can't remember past Union teams really having that much, you know, of a number of possession in their favor. It's usually obviously always been the other way around because that's the type of soccer they played. In terms of what happened last match, I don't have the goal differential in front of me for Pachuca at the moment, but Jim Curtin did mention the press conference. That was the first time they had been shut out all season. So that does give some, I guess, you know, pat on the back for our defensive back line doing what it did. But against the Union on Tuesday, they had three shots on goal. So did we. They had 18 shot attempts and they had six corner kicks. So again, we had our chances. They had their chances. I definitely think they could have gotten at least one. I think we could have gotten at least maybe two. But again, it is what it is. We're going to Mexico 0-0. So we have not much to further talk about tonight. I know we are all kind of nervous for Tuesday. I know Jose, again, to his point, we'll discuss the press conference tomorrow once that gets released and we'll share some notes. Valerie actually has a question. That is interesting about the growing percentage of possession. What does that mean? I think it means that the Union are feeling more comfortable on attack and they had the players like Quinn Sullivan and Jack McGlynn to contribute to that. Whereas someone like Leon Flock, maybe doesn't contribute to that type of possession because he's just not that kind of player. But again, we'll see. It's early on in the season. You can't, you know, get a sample size as small and make assumptions.
You know what it also means, Jose. Mike? It means that they have possession and they do absolutely nothing with it because they're not scoring.
I mean, they were scoring up until Chicago, until Sporting Kansas City.
Yeah.
I mean, right? They did, but go ahead.
I was going to say quickly, just my closing thought before the show. I mean, obviously, I believe it was Valerie. Who mentioned earlier about, I think you might have mentioned about scoring too early. You can, again, you can't win games scoring early, but you can definitely lose games conceding early. And I think going back to that crowd and the raucous atmosphere and intimidating atmosphere, if the Union, that crowd would be rocking already before kickoff and trying to cause that intimidating atmosphere, if the Union concede early, that's going to tell you a lot about, in my opinion, the mental toughness of this team and how far this team's going to go this year is how they can react if they do go a guard down early, because that's also true, Valerie.
Yeah, it's true.
If the team goes down a goal early, and that's just going to add to the atmosphere. It's just going to add to the intimidation the excitement and the intimidation that will probably be glaring down onto the field towards the Union, and that will tell us a lot about how this team is going to, how far this team is going to go this year, and how, what our expectations should be. Because if they crumble at the first sign of pressure, and then you're going to start perhaps panic a bit, and perhaps the perception around this team changes from comeback kings, free flow goals, whatever, to have they really got the bottle to hang in there with the best team. So I think this is a good barometer for the rest of the season to see what way it goes.
We've been asking that question for years. Can they actually hang with the big clubs? Can they actually finish games out? And listen, if they do score early, which I know we kind of joked might be not the best thing in the world, it does quiet the crowd down a bit. And I can't exactly argue with that logic. No. So I appreciate your say,
final. No, yeah, I was going to say, if the Union concede early, sorry, if Pachuca score early, the atmosphere for the Union, if Pachuca score early, and you know, the home fans are going to go crazy and everything, like, how will the Union react is what I meant. Not if the Union score early, which is just a thing perhaps to look out for. I mean, if the Union crumble at the first sign of pressure, is that going to...
Well, I mean, listen, we'll find out. I have a better feeling on this team than last year. I think last year's team probably does. This year's seems to have a bit more fight. But Jose, how about your final thought? Dave shared his. What are your last little comments here before we wrap up the show?
No, I'm super hopeful, right? I've been very, very transparent that, you know, in the way I rank some of these competitions, right? Supporter Shield, I don't really care about because it doesn't mean anything in this country, really. MLS Cup, just get in, win the 7 matches, and then you're golden or whatever it is now with the 3-game first round. US Open Cup, Union are not in it, so don't have to worry about that. So to me, I think right now, especially with, again, how easy it should be to get into the MLS playoffs, Jim Curtin and that team should be putting, and again, this delay or postponement totally helps. All of the eggs have to be on this basket to beating Pachuca on Tuesday. And I can't tell you how happy I will be for the Union and maybe like taking my press hat off and putting like my fan hat for a second, how proud I would be to like say, you know, for the Union that next year when they play the tournament, to have a patch that has the number 1 on it because they won the competition once. Like, you know how cool that will be? Like, that's a jersey I would actually get versus going on eBay and buying something for 3-4 years ago because whatever, like I can't afford a $220 jersey with a name or whatever. So like it's interesting. I really, 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 really hope that they're able to sort it out and win. But then ultimately I just want to say you know, thank you again to everybody who has been so kind, Mike, to the coverage from the three of us over these past last few months, right? During the off season and going into this regular season. It has been an outpouring of support, just constant positivity, also telling us maybe we're wrong, and that's totally fair. Just help us guide the conversation. We want you to be involved. So Val, Jillian, Kyle, we don't want to be us as people behind the mic or behind, you know, our screens, just like shouting into a closet. We want your feedback. So continue to share, continue to tell us what you want to hear, what you want to learn more about, etc. And thank you so much for tuning in. I don't know if these numbers are right, Mike, but they seem sort of bananas.
47 viewers.
Yeah, holy shit. Are they bots?
They must be. At least 30 of them are bots. I don't believe it. I agree with Jose. I appreciate all the feedback. And it's been nice seeing people at the stands as well, more and more often now. So just my final thought. You know, the Union face off against Pachuca on Tuesday night. They will take on the winner of Robin Hood and Herediano, if I pronounce that correctly. Mm-hmm. Herediano has a 2-0 lead right now on aggregate over Robin Hood. So just something to look ahead, if you know, peeking ahead. But I agree. I think this is we had a tough match against Atlas last year. I know we went down to Mexico and had a very strong performance. I want to see us do it again and leave with a victory this time rather than that. I think it was a 2-2 draw last year. But either way, and Chris, thanks for joining us. This is Across the Pitch. We're going to end here. I know it's Sunday night. So I'm Mike Barrera. You can follow me on Twitter and TikTok at mbarrera1323. Dave GC Miller on Twitter. He covers the Union with us, as well as Gillingham FC for League 2, playing the lovely Wrexham once in a while. And Jose, our very own Bolivian Tom Bogert, Jose R. Nunez 91 on Twitter. And you have a Substack. Please go to his profile to find that and all his little content there. Our next show might be maybe a halftime show on Tuesday. Maybe we do something midweek. We haven't had a steady schedule this year because all three of us have our own things going on. So we're trying to do at least one show a week. So if it's not a set day, we're chiming in on a Monday or a Sunday or a Friday. So just stay tuned. I always try to share things on Facebook to give you guys at least a few hours in advance heads up. But this is Across the Pitch. Hopefully the Union pull out a win and we advance to the round of 8 in the Champions League.
Oh, yeah. Doop.
Boop.